Hi, friends. It's Anne. So this was another one of those weeks where we had some scheduling issues with the recording time. You know, Meredith is getting back from Washington, D.C., and Hillary has a million things going on like she always does, and Bobby had to work a couple of his side hustles because, you know, who would Bobby be if he didn't have a couple of side hustles? So we just couldn't make the timing work, so we're going to bring you a Tishy classic. We decided to bring back episode number 42 called The Majesty and Mystery of Space, wherein Hillary and Jeremy and I got together to talk about space, which, you know, is a topic you can totally cover in 2 hours. Jeremy and I are confirmed space nerds, and Hillary was kind enough to put up with us. And we had a great conversation, including some eclipse talk, which is why we thought this would be an apropos show to come out this week. So we'll be back next week, and I expect we will have some eclipse debrief. Not from me, because I ain't going to Texas with a million other people that are going. But probably from Hillary. Maybe we'll get some input from Jeremy. And so we'll see you then. And until then, enjoy this best of.
Okay, Tishy, we've had a problem here. From the middle-aged Mama Studios in hot and sunny Austin, Texas, it's This Show Has Everything. And since America is a depressing trash ball, the gang here has decided we need a different view. We've inoculated against the measles and are heading out into space. Joining me on this 51st anniversary of Apollo 11, I obviously have future participant in Space Camp. From the Stick of Butter Studios in New Brighton, Minnesota, it's Anne with a Plan Lundholm. Hi, Anne.
Hi, Hillary. I mean, Mission Control.
Yes, please. I'm Jean. I'm the Ed Harris of this.
Oh, are you wearing that white vest?
Yes, of course, obviously. I don't think he does, but I might be chain smoking as well, so just get ready. we definitely couldn't have a space show without this guy. Joining us from GarageLand Studios in Lynnwood, Washington, it's Mr. Space himself, Jeremy Holmes. Hi, Jeremy.
Hello.
Welcome. Oh,
that was my cool astronaut hello.
Hello,
it's me.
Hello.
I didn't know that you had entered the Mr. Space pageant, much less that you had won it, Jeremy.
Actually, that's like one of my favorite Jetsons, where it's like Miss Universe or something, or like Miss Galaxy, I think. It's so 60s and sexist, but I love it so much. though we blasted off to the final frontier, we'll definitely do some small talk, some medium talk, tea she recommends, housekeeping, and how you can get involved. With that, let's do some small talk. We have a gym tracker update. thank you to Danny Kuntz for donating a little bit to our gym tracker. We really appreciate it. Every little bit helps, and that's awesome.
Going to space is expensive, and there are bound to be some jams. Everything the movies have taught us.
No, there's always a jam.
$10,000 a pound.
Imagine. Ooh, can we buy some like space ice cream stuff, even though it's kind of garbage?
Dippin' Dots?
Yes. Dippin' Dots? Yeah.
That's what we're going to do. That's what we'll do. That's what we're going to do at whenever we can picnic again. We'll have some Dippin' Dots for sure.
Space food.
Christy got Tang. A case of those. Like, she got a huge styrofoam container of them delivered to our house.
God love Christy. She likes a bulk buy of that kind of stuff, and I love it.
Yep.
That's the best part of going to the zoo, is getting the Dippin' Dots.
I know. You know, my dad, who loves space, he was so cheap about that stuff. I'm like, please. And he's like, we're not spending money on, you know, because it's always so randomly expensive. That's all I want.
Oh, yeah. We, you know, when you go to the amusement park and all I wanted was the frozen lemonade from the little cart thing.
Yes. You're like, it's hot. This is what I want. Too much sugar.
Don't you love me? You've taken me here and spent, you know, $150 on tickets.
Yes. Actually, when I was a kid, I went to Kennedy Space Center out in Florida. And we went to the, like, lunchroom there to eat lunch. And my family, we went out, like, once a quarter. And when we did, it was to Taco Bell. And we could pick three things off the 79-cent menu. And then we would get, like, the 89-cent, like, drink. And that would be our fancy going out dinner. Well, we went to the lunchroom at Kennedy Space Center. And we got all the stuff and went to go check out. And it was, like, $85.
Oh, my God.
And I remember the look on my parents' face. And then I remember my dad going, well, it's going to a good cause.
Oh,
but, yeah, that stuff
man.
Is expensive. No Dippin' Dots, though.
Seriously, no Dippin' Dots. Damn.
I like that our parents apparently felt the same way, because back in the late 80s and early 90s, my dad would take us to Taco Bell every once in a while because you could feed a family of five for $15.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
We were comfortably, like, middle class, I'm guessing.
I don't
have any memory of ever wanting for anything. But apparently we lived like we weren't.
Yeah, actually, it's funny because Dave and I share a lot of sensibilities, but his family for sure did not go out to eat like that. I mean, occasionally, I guess, but that was not a thing that they did. And I'm such a brat. Like, we went out to eat. That's what we did as a family, is going out to eat. And so when I take the kids, and it always ends up being more expensive than you think, because I might get like one or two glasses of wine as well. And it's like, and there's, you know, it's like $60 for the kids and me to go out to eat. Dave's like, stop spending money on that. These kids are brats.
It's cheaper if you bring your own wine.
I know. Sneak it in my purse.
You're allowed, are you?
I mean, not technically.
I can bring like my own ranch dressing in my purse or something. That's about the extent of it, I think.
What was I listening to where this is space related, where they said that for the Russian astronauts, they actually have a little zip pouch in their space. Not suits, you know, space jumpsuits.
Yeah.
That's for the vodka flask, just the little
really?
Vodka flask. Yeah.
Wow. It really is embedded in their culture. I remember taking an international studies class, and the guy was like, not Gorbachev. What was the one? Yeltsin. He was like, he was just drunk all the time. Like, that's all he was. Oh, he was drunk all the time. I'm like, wow.
I mean, now that you know that, you look back at him and you're like, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Now I see. And that's why he was like, whatever. We don't have to be communist anymore. It's not a big deal.
That was why he was so red and sweaty all the time. Yes.
The bulbous nose. All right. Somehow small talk really bearded some different directions. But okay. Jeremy has to give a content warning. So Jeremy, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to provide some context, I guess, if you guys hear weird sounds in the background. Sometimes when I'm talking about space or other people are talking about space, I can get weepy, and it comes on suddenly, and it can come on hard. So it might not happen, but if it does, just don't be scared.
it's so pure. I love it.
And if you're sensitive to weird mouth sounds, just beware. I'll try and back off the microphone.
Christy said you've had several episodes like in space museums and stuff.
Oh yeah. We went to go see the space shuttle down in Los Angeles, and the first time I went there, I walked in the room and like immediately was just like, and then I looked over and there was this little girl like standing in front of one of the modules that goes in the back of the like cargo area of the space shuttle and like sketching it all out, and she had a little like patch on, and I just started weeping. I was just standing there crying, and Christy goes, "You should probably not just stare."
A small child.
Yeah. Just,
while crying.
It's so beautiful.
I always want to explain to people though, when we're on vacation and we don't have Elliot with us and I see other kids, and I'm like, oh man, I miss E, and sometimes I tear up a little or something, and I'm like, I always want to go over and explain to other parents, it's not weird because I have a kid too that's about this age but I haven't seen her. So
I mean, it wasn't
weird
until you felt like you had to go over and tell them it wasn't weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
my goodness. Well, it's okay. I like the emotion. It's pure and genuine and lovely. So no need to be scared.
Agree. Yeah. Agree. Right. I'm into it.
Yep. Okay. And then you also have a point of clarification, Ray, quarantine shaming.
Yes. Yes. And so I think when I heard you guys talking about it on the show last night, by the way, I wasn't even going to send that. I typed it and I thought that I didn't hit enter. I thought that I didn't send it until I heard you guys read it on
You're
the
like,
show.
You're like, oh shit.
No, it was a good topic.
Well, I think that you guys made the mistake of listening to the actual words that I said instead of my intent. Because what I was trying to say was, is it okay to have conversations with people that are maybe in your life? Now, I'm not talking about like yelling at the lady at Safeway that's not wearing a mask, or the guy. It's probably a guy, let's be honest. And I'm talking about your parents not making the greatest choice, or one of your friends or family, or, you know, one of your internet friends out there, somebody that you know and kind of have in your life. Is it okay to maybe not shame, but is it okay to go to them and say like, hey, these are maybe not the safest choices you're making?
I don't know. I mean, like, I get what you're saying, but totally. But I think the point still stands that people, like, I don't know, they just dig in, and if they're not wearing it, there's like a, I don't know, I'm like, there's a reason they're not wearing it. I don't know. I don't have a problem with it, but like, I'm trying to put myself in those, like, you telling me, Hillary, you need to wear a mask. Eventually I would come around and be like, yeah, you're totally right. But my instinct would be like, don't tell me what to do. So yeah. I don't know. I mean, I get it, because you're like, I need to say something because they're doing something wrong. And they should know that. But I don't know. People are so complicated about that stuff.
To me, it's kind of like how I think Christians should act. Like, if you really believe that the only way for me to get to heaven is to, you know, accept God as my savior, or I'm going to burn in hell for eternity, then you should be doing everything possible to try and get me to go to heaven. And the fact that people don't kind of makes me wonder sometimes, like, where are you at with your belief? But I feel the same way about this. Like, I'm very much live and let live in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I should say I try to be. I'd like to think of myself as that kind of person. I'm probably insanely judgmental. But when it comes to this, it just, I don't even know what the right position is. But I just, it like throws all of that out the window, because it's not just like that other person. It's affecting other people, my family, your family.
Yeah, I know. So.
I think it's, at this point, it's a problem of timing. I think if we could have had real conversations about this 3-4 months ago, I think you may have, you know, had more success in in changing people's viewpoints. But I think at this point, it's all on such a hair trigger that it's like, there's sort of, everybody is so entrenched at this point. I think that it's going to be hard. I mean,
And it's become so political now, you know, it's just as like I was saying, I just feel like people are making a choice now as opposed to being uninformed. And that's frustrating. Like, I've tried to, I don't know, cull my Facebook feed a little bit. So not like it's just people who believe exactly what I believe, but more like, you know, people who have good hearts and you know, I don't know, aren't saying ridiculous things, but I'll have a few pop up where I'm like, oh my gosh, there is this whole group of people that believe that this is a grand conspiracy and that the virus will be magically gone in November, you know, November 4th or whatever, the day after the election. Mm-hmm. And
if you wear a mask, that means the terrorists have won. Thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much all my Facebook is. Like, I'm not even joking. Like, I have between my past life as a Christian and my more recent life in Alcoholics Anonymous, a lot of the people in that program are a little nutty. a little nutty about this stuff, and
searching for answers. Let's put it that way. Yeah.
So I
perhaps
have...
grasping the wrong thing in some ways.
Let me just say, it's a target-rich environment for extremism.
Ah, yes.
So Yeah, it's interesting. The only other thing I'll say, sorry, I know I talk a lot sometimes. The only other thing I'll say is that I came out of a really conservative upbringing, and one of the ways that I changed was by observing people fight on the internet. Like, I would go find people that made me angry or thought differently than me, and I would try and figure out why they felt the way they did. And that usually involved me, like, digging deep into the comment threads and, like, reading people's interactions and reading their fights. And so I think about that a lot as I'm fighting with people on the internet, that knowing that I'm not going to change that person's mind that I'm talking to, probably, yeah. Who knows. Yeah. But maybe there's a bunch of, you know, for every person that's being a dipshit in the comments, you know, there's probably three or four people hanging back and just seeing.
That's a good point, though, because, I mean, what we're saying is that it's pretty useless to try and talk to a person directly about it because they are entrenched and defensive. But if there's somebody observing who's not the person who feels attacked, then maybe there is room for that.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I always go to my friends, my bonkers friends' walls to to have those conversations, because I'm like, their friends need to see this.
And again, I mean, we've reiterated this, like, maybe this is the third time. It's like, asking questions is better than accusations. And it is a constant, it's something I have to learn about all the time, because I always want to be like, you didn't do this and you're dumb because of it and la la la. And that's just like, it never works actually, ever. Sometimes with my husband, but then I have to like turn on tears a little bit and get really upset. But then I feel bad. So it never works really.
Now I have these moments in therapy where my therapist goes, well, what do you mean by XYZ? And I'm like, shit. Because I know she's got me.
Damn it.
It is. Forced to confront some deeply held assumptions. God damn it.
I'm not ready to let go of those.
I need those.
It helps me in my daily life. Well, I mean, it's definitely something, you know, it's just going to be an ongoing thing. And now it's getting into school talk and whether or not opening up schools is good and the various positions on that. And
Yeah. I think the real mistake we make is in thinking that it's a simple answer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's not, because we're just messy. We're messy people.
I know. And we're messy people. We have no, you know, state support, state meaning like the larger government or your actual state. It's just as there's mixed messages and everybody's confused and there's whatever. It just sucks.
Yeah.
So. We're all doing the best we can.
Yeah.
Except for Betsy DeVos.
Yes. Oh, I think Colleen called her like Miss MLM. Like,
All right. Let's get on with it. Yes. Let's get on to the mailbag. So last week we talked about Detroit movies. Jeremy, you were a big fan of Detroit, correct?
Big fan of Detroit. Yeah. In fact, I tried Detroit driving in Seattle. extremely disruptive. Extremely disruptive. But, you know, Seattle driving in Detroit, even more disruptive.
Imagine.
Arguably more dangerous, I would say.
The closest I've gotten is Cleveland driving, which is if you slow down because the light's turning yellow, you're going to get rear-ended.
I was, I think Christy mentioned it on the show, but I always get myself over my head because I'm overconfident and I think I'm invincible. And I remember driving around Detroit and being like, yeah, this is a little sketch, but it's all right. And Meredith was like genuinely concerned about where we were and was like, don't stop. Seriously, don't stop. Wow, this is a real thing. This is legit. But yeah, I mean, it has all the benefits of a big city, except for there's parking and stuff is cheap, and it's cool. I like it.
Yeah, but you haven't been in the winter yet.
That's true.
I think you need to try that before you make the decision to move there.
I think I could deal with the cold better than the heat, but.
Yeah, I'm the same way. That's why I live up here.
Like I said, I'm overconfident, and I'm sure I would be fine.
Yeah, it'll be fine. Well, so coming off the heels of our Detroit discussion, we talked about Detroit movies, and therefore our question of the week was, what movie makes you think of Detroit? A lot of people think of the same movies that we thought of, which, you know, makes us secure in our choices.
Yes.
We did really well, but there were a few others that came up. Edward said Out of Sight.
Oh, that's a good one.
Was that the first, like, big movie that Clooney starred in? That was, like, when he was evacuating from the ER.
Yeah, I mean, I think he had been in some other stuff but hadn't quite clicked, but that was the first one that you're like, oh, okay, like, he's a good actor. And, like, well, and they had such palpable chemistry in that it was like, yep. Oh.
You mean, what was it, Attack of the Killer Tomatoes? Wasn't,
no, I don't think that was.
Wasn't the launching vehicle for his career.
Unfortunately not. No, I don't think so. Damn.
Yeah, I like that movie. I almost picked it.
Yeah, it's a good one. It's a good one. And it's J-Lo's, like, I mean, they are very sexy together.
Yep. Yep. Tierre and Scott and Gregory all brought RoboCop, another indelibly Detroit movie.
Filmed in Dallas. In
so long. Really?
Yeah, a lot of it was filmed in Dallas, which is funny because they don't really look alike. But I remember being very scared of RoboCop. Like, that movie's like, really, I don't know why, just frightened me.
A vision of the future.
Yeah.
Ken, who, I don't know, I feel like Ken's cheating because he's from Detroit. So when he picks a movie called Detroit, Ken knows.
Yep.
We can't argue against a movie from a person from Detroit named Detroit. Okay, fine. Alicia says, are we counting Beverly Hills Cop? I don't want to break the rules again.
Thank you, Alicia.
The tagline of those movies really should be, quote, boy, I don't know how things are in Detroit, but.
Yep.
I know you don't want to break the rules. I appreciate that, Alicia. I seriously wanted to pick Beverly Hills Cop just for the first 15-minute set in Detroit.
Yeah.
I mean, just for the banana up the tailpipe scene. That was a banana, right?
I think so. God, it's been so long.
I've never seen that movie.
Oh, it's good.
It's good. It's
Eddie Murphy at the height of his powers.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think I need to start a podcast where I just watch all of the movies that everybody else have seen and then talk about them.
That actually is not a bad idea. It's like you make a list and then the people who recommended it to you, you have that person on to discuss it.
Or here's the twist. You have guests who haven't seen a big movie, like how I've never seen Titanic. And then we watch it and I come on and talk about it with you.
Oh, my God. There we go. There we go.
I want to be on that show. I have so many, I have so many feelings about it.
Finally, Burton has one called Crossing the Bridge. Hillary, I've never heard of this one. Do you know
it? No, I've never heard of it. It sounds like an animal dying movie, but but listen, okay, it's 1992. Let's see who's in it. Mike Binder. I mean, Josh Charles is in it. I am a Josh Charles stan. I enjoy him a lot. I think he is very hot. Stephen Baldwin and Jason Gedrick, who, like, they kept trying to make a thing, but
he was so hot.
He was very hot. He was very hot. And Judd Apatow produced it. Wow.
So it's a comedy?
I guess. Mike Binder is a he directed a whole bunch of movies. Mind of the Married Man. Oh, he directed The Contender, which is a movie that I really like, actually. Oh, wow. All right. Anyway, this is I'm going down a path.
Do you guys allow documentaries on your on the movie list?
Of course.
Sure. Why not?
There's a movie called Burn. I think it's on Netflix. It's a documentary about the Detroit Fire Department.
Oh.
And how they have had to take on kind of a unique tactics for fighting fires because of their, like, so limited resources. They keep consolidating fire stations, and there's so many fires there because people are squatting in these abandoned houses, and so they catch on fire easy. And they just are, like, super aggressive and will show up and just charge into a house that's on fire and spray it with a bunch of water and then bail and head out to the next fire. But it's really interesting. It's called Burn.
Cool.
I wonder if any of Michael Moore's films would fit the category of Detroit. Well, his is Michigan generally, and, you know, also America.
Yeah.
God. More generally than that.
Remember when Fahrenheit 9/11 came out? It was like such a big deal. We thought that that meant that George Bush like was going to lose. And it was like, LOL, JK.
Remember when our current president was exposed as a rapist a couple months before the election? And then we still... And then we still voted for him.
We were like, well, that should do it.
I was just talking about it. So this is a side. Okay. Cause I have to like bring up Hamilton. Like always, it's like contractually obligated.
It's our Hamilton check for the episode.
I was thinking about it when I was watching Hamilton. So in the Reynolds pamphlet song, there's Thomas Jefferson. Okay. So Hamilton writes a letter about like how he hasn't done anything corrupt. The reason why he was spending this money was because he was having an affair and this guy was. The woman's husband was bribing him, whatever, blah, blah, blah. So he writes this letter basically exposing himself. And then Thomas Jefferson, well, he never gonna be president now, never gonna. Okay, so it's kind of like funny and whatever. So, but when Lin-Manuel Miranda was on Saturday Night Live, it was like right after the Access Hollywood stuff came out and he's singing and he passes Trump's picture. You know, they have the pictures of all the hosts. Like in the Saturday Night Live studio.
Yes.
He passes the picture and he just goes, never gonna be president now. And I remember thinking it was so funny. And now when I think about that line, it's just like, it doesn't matter. Nothing fucking matters. He's the fucking president and it's so depressing.
Let's go to space.
Well, you know, if we were gonna do this disastrous experiment with a popular reality host president, at least we picked the stupidest one possible.
No, literally the stupidest one.
I mean, up until a few months ago, he really hadn't done anything that wasn't reversible.
I know. That was the thing I kept thinking about. It was like, well, at least, you know, this totally sucks, but
incompetent, at least, yeah. So they can't do any more damage.
And at least, like, there hasn't been something, you know, there hasn't been a 9/11. There hasn't been something horrible happening. And now it's like, oh, you thought you were going to get out of this one.
Just children in cages at borders and stuff like that.
Well, that's all. That's all.
Indeed.
I mean, if that's the worst you can come up with,
I would argue that some of that is irreversible.
That's true. That's true. You are absolutely right on that. I guess I was thinking that we were getting off surprisingly easily.
Yeah, for that. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
But he did make the Space Force.
He did.
That is true. I mean, if there's one thing in his legacy will be the creation of Space Force.
That's going to make novelty Halloween costumes for the next 2 or 3 years at least. Once we start having Halloween again, I assume.
Oh, God.
Oh, Zoom trick-or-treating. How's that going to work?
No, Jesus Christ. Oh, God.
I left the candy outside your house last night. So Zoom me and say trick-or-treat and then walk out to your porch.
All right. Should we get out of this freaking planet?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Let's blast off and go elsewhere. I don't know where elsewhere is, but we'll just start the journey and we'll figure it out. We'll take our Thomas guide and we'll figure out where we end up.
What are the coordinates? A4.
And then go up 5 million miles.
Yes.
See where that ends us. So we're going to talk about the majesty and mystery of space. Hillary, this show was your idea.
It was.
What sparked this for you? You know, several things, really.
Yeah, it was several things. Now I'm trying to remember, like, we were just talking about, oh, maybe space will be our next movie destination. And then Jeremy said, you're not talking about space without having me on. And then I just was like, you know what? Maybe we do go to space. And I looked to see, I'm like, it's happening soon. I knew Apollo 11 happened in July of 69. Last year, obviously, was the 50th. And I was like, it has to be coming soon. And actually, I think on the day that this drops, or right about then, is the 51st anniversary of the moon landing. So I thought, you know what? Let's commemorate it.
The alleged moon landing.
I know. The quote, heavy quotes, moon landing. God, seriously, I just always imagine if you're Neil Armstrong or Buzz Aldrin and you were just like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, are you serious right now?
I mean, no wonder Buzz Aldrin punches people.
I would. I'd be like, I sacrificed life and limb to go be the first person on the moon. Like, respect me.
I don't think Buzz Aldrin could punch people now because of all the bracelets and like accessories that he has on. I'm not sure if he could lift his arm up high enough. That or his suspenders would hold him down. One of those two things.
Oh, yeah. So that was sort of it. I don't know that much about space at all, but I love a space movie. I really, really enjoy a space movie. So,
well, there was one thing that actually precipitated all of this was that you posted in our chat a link specifically to me that the movie Space Camp is now streaming for free on YouTube.
And you had maybe the best response.
Oh, yeah. I was like, well, maybe if I didn't have it on DVD and VHS,
multi-platform,
I would watch it on YouTube.
Oh, so, RIP Kelly Preston. But yeah,
I know. What the hell?
I don't know. She's so young. She was 57. Ugh.
I won't say she was a great actress,
No. She had one kind of hot sex scene in Jerry Maguire. Not a great actress. Though I do feel like men of a certain age, meaning like Dave's age, I'm not like think she was definitely like a hottie to them. You know, she was a little bit older, but like,
who are you talking about?
Kelly Preston, who starred in.
She's an actress who is John Travolta's wife. Who
I'm just gonna look her up.
Yeah,
starred in Space Camp.
She did start in Space Camp. She started in a lot of like random 80s stuff, and she's she was in Jerry Maguire. Not a ton of. She was in Twins, I think. I'm pretty sure she was in that. But I mean, yeah, not a great actress. She was cute as a button, though.
Yep.
Oh, John Travolta looks creepy with a shaved head. Holy cow! Well,
but at least he's just letting go of the plugs a little bit. I mean, come on, man. We know
he's entered some truth, which I appreciate.
Wow. That's what all of these male actors need to do. Anyway, so yeah, Space Camp is widely available on YouTube for free. I'll link to it. But that kind of got us started talking about space.
All right. Well, let's talk about the things that make us interested in space to start with. I mean, obviously, I've said it right there, Space Camp.
Yeah.
Which came out in 1986, which was scheduled to release, like, I'm going to say, like, within 2 weeks after the Challenger disaster.
Yikes.
Yeah. So, obviously, they delayed the release for a while. And then there wasn't really a lot of appetite for movies about teenagers who accidentally get launched into space. But it was, we were living in Switzerland, and we used to go into the city to the one teeny tiny little video store that had English movies in it. And my mom was very strict. We weren't allowed to get PG-13. I mean, I was 10, so she wouldn't have let me get PG-13. But I didn't want to get, like, cartoon baby crap. And Space Camp was just perfect. And I fell in love with the idea of space and going to space. Obviously, Star Wars was a big one for me because Star Wars came out like a few months after I was born. So it's been there my whole life. I would say as I've gotten a little bit older, I just love pictures of celestial bodies. Yep. I've had really in my life two different kinds of wall calendars, if you don't count the Justin Trudeau one that a mystery person sent me this year.
Maybe it was Justin himself.
Maybe it was. I don't know. We have mysterious ways of keeping in touch. But other than that, I had calendars that were pictures of like scenes of Greece and not Greece the movie, Greece the country, and pictures of like celestial bodies, planets and galaxies and other astronomical features. And I think the colors are beautiful and the shapes are beautiful. And I really love that.
It's hard to comprehend that it's real when you look at the pictures of that, especially when you realize that like what you're seeing with your eyes is millions of years old. Like by the time it's gotten to us, like you are looking back in time and it could not even exist anymore. Man, my voice today.
I know.
It's magical.
It is. It really is.
Yes. spoiler alert, I was doing a little bit of research last night for an upcoming segment here, topic, and I was looking at lots of pictures of all the planets, and they're so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would like to go to all of them, which is not a possibility, but I would like to. My third thing in the category of things that, I don't know, I think this is kind of a little bit of a cop-out because I was already interested in space, but Jeremy, you talked about going to the Kennedy Space Center, and when I was 15, my parents took us to Disney World, and we spent, I think, like 5 days at Disney World, and one day we went to Cocoa Beach, and one day we went to the Kennedy Space Center, and it was by far my favorite part of that trip.
You're like, screw the beach.
I know. Forget Disney World. I'm going to see the rockets. And we went on a, they had a tour, just a bus tour where you could ride around the property and you could actually, you didn't get all the way up to the launch pad area or whatever, but you could go and get quite close to the shuttle to see it. And I don't know if they were running tests or whatever, but the bus tour guide kept saying, that is not smoke you see coming out of the rocket. It is actually steam because it's all fresh water. And I just remember that to this day, seeing the space shuttle sort of up close-ish and how cool that was and how special that made that vacation for me. And so I would like to go back there someday, as well as actually going to space camp, which I have talked about.
Yes.
Space camp for adults, which makes me really excited and also makes me feel really lame.
No.
Wait, why does it make you feel lame?
I don't know, because camp is for kids.
No, camp rules.
Yeah, most like corporate retreats are just camp.
Trust
They're
false.
Just camps with like a tie on. That's all it is.
Oh, but you need to go. Like, I mean, you have to. This has to be something you do at some point in your life. You are destined. We'll see.
I hope so.
We'll make it happen.
All right. What about you, Hillary?
Okay. So I was trying to think about this. Like, I think growing up with solidly baby boomer parents, which I love you guys, but you are. Baby boomers tend to be, you know, it was a crowning achievement in their lifetime. You know, my parents were in their 20s or whatever when it happened. And they have just always, my dad especially, but they've just always been so interested in space. And anytime, you know, something happens, like when the Mars rover went, you know, all the stuff, my dad would be, you know, be so focused on it and really, really excited about it. And just, I feel like we've always just loved it. And really, I think something that I love about other people is when they know something so much about something that I have no idea about. Like, the competency that has to go into putting a man in space is just amazing to me. And I know, like, you know, you could learn about it. It's not unreachable, but it just is when somebody is so specialized in that, I just think it's really cool. So when I watch all these movies, obviously they're throwing around jargon, but it's like it's like competency porn, you know, they're working so hard to make this happen. And I just think it's really, really cool because it is this like huge, vast thing, but you can use math and science and you can figure it out. I don't know. I just think it's really cool. And I've always heard the question of like, would you rather be at the bottom of the ocean or out in space? And like, both of those seem very scary to me, but space just seems so scary, but really cool. It just seems really cool. It just, there's so much out there. And like y'all were talking, it's like, we're such a tiny little part of it and we think we're so important, but like, there's so much out there and we don't know about it. And there's just so much. It just, it seems, I don't know. It seems very cool. So that's kind of it. Oh, and also, you know, my family, a large part of my family is from D.C. So we would go up there every summer to visit my grandmother. And, you know, every year we would do, you know, we'd go to the White House or we'd go just walk around, do some sort of tour. And I remember going to the Air and Space Museum and I still get excited about it. It was so cool. And I really, you know, once we can travel and go to museums and stuff again, I cannot wait to take my kids there because I loved it. I loved it. And I know some people don't like it, but I loved it. I was just like, wow. So that's it.
The thing that you said about comparing space to the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah.
that made me realize I love like underwater documentaries.
Yes.
I love those where you go down and you see the weird creatures at the bottom of the sea. So I'm thinking that that might come from the same source.
Totally.
But I like both of those. Of course, it's a lot darker down at the bottom of the ocean. So
I got certified to scuba dive like 15 years ago, 20 years ago, a long time. And I agree with you, Anne. It's the exact same thing. I think all the time while I'm underwater, I haven't gone in a couple of years, I guess, but I used to think all the time when I was underwater of the how the astronauts would train in the in those pools and realize like, oh, this is probably the closest I'll ever get to being weightless and just kind of, you know, drifting free and with like neutral buoyancy and kind of being suspended in the middle of stuff. It's really cool.
I am an absolute sucker for the Science Museum IMAX movies.
Yes.
That are either space
yes.
or under the sea. I love them. Where you see the like the giant cuttlefish, the 6-foot cuttlefish at the bottom of the sea. I'm like, that's so cool.
That's very cool. And it just is like, you realize again, like how much we don't really know about so many parts of the ocean, you know, I mean, we can sort of map it, but there's so much that goes down there and it's so deep, kind of like space. Yeah. It's like this almost infinite amount. That's kind of crazy to think about.
Mm-hmm. So Jeremy, why do you like space?
Am I supposed to just go through all of these questions or are we just doing them one at a time?
We're just doing them one at a time. We're having a conversation.
Yeah, I gotcha. Okay. Sorry. I'm new here. I think I like space because, well, it's something that like a fascination with space is something that was instilled in me at a very young age. I got it from my dad. And I think I've always just been, like the bigness of space. We were talking earlier about the galaxies and that stuff. And if you look at those pictures of celestial bodies and look at how far away they are and how big they are and how big the universe is, there's something about that bigness that feels almost safe to me. It puts things in perspective and makes me realize that like my life is this tiny, 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 tiny little blip on the radar of a tiny, 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 tiny little planet floating around in this massive universe. And that actually makes me feel, it makes me feel safe. It puts a lot of the problems in my life in some form of perspective. It doesn't mean
like the idea of the scale of that is almost unfathomable, isn't it? Like my brain tries to handle it, but I'm pretty sure that my brain is not quite up to the task.
Yes.
It does. It really does kind of hurt my brain a little bit, like thinking about traveling to far out reaches of space, by like how long it takes you to get there. And like just how completely far away it's just, it's like too much for the human brain to comprehend.
It's it's crazy. And I think that the like piece on top of that that has me really hooked is the fact that there are people that strap themselves to giant bombs and shoot themselves up into space to go out as far as they can, you know, to go out and land on another thing and walk around and pick up rocks and come back home and build these robots that go out even farther and do that stuff. There's just something about that that is so fascinating and inspiring and encouraging. And like there's always something out there for us to explore and step into. And I think that like it makes me excited. You know, I'm drawn to people that have passion for things and you know, when you are around people that are willing to risk their lives for something like that, it's inspiring.
And to think that we accomplished that back 51 to 60-ish years ago, all with the computational power of a generic calculator, not even like a TI-80 whatever calculator.
Yeah.
Like we basically did all that math by hand.
People and slide rules.
Did all that stuff. Yeah. And if we put the same focus and resources relatively into it today as we did back then, what other kind of progress we could make is something that's really exciting to think about.
Yeah.
And now that we have Space Force, we can do that.
Probably.
So what are our touch points? Jeremy, I really like your space touch point. The thing that makes you really sort of think about space and keep it top of mind. What is that? That cornerstone for you.
Well, I have a massive list, but the first one
as
on
you
there,
should.
The first one on there is the Challenger explosion. It's like one of the few memories that I actually have from my childhood because we saw it happen. My dad would always. I mean, even until I moved out of the house, my dad would always remind me that there's a launch of some kind. He still to this day will text me sometimes when there's a launch or something going on that he thinks I might want to know about. And so we were watching it happen. And not weirdly enough, but after it blew up, like obviously I was upset. And I remember talking to my parents and they told me, you know, I was like, well, what happened? what happened to them? Like, where did they go? And that's when my parents, as a 3-year-old, decided to tell me that when people die, if they believe in Jesus, they will go to heaven. And if they don't believe in Jesus, they will go to hell. And I said, what's hell? And they're like, oh, fire, burning, all that stuff. I'm like, I want to give my life to Jesus then. Being a parent now, that is so fucked up.
Like, it really is.
I remember, I mean, it was probably when Ellie was about 3, and I had this realization of like, oh my God, I can't believe my parents did that to me. I mean, even if it's, you know, it was a something that I still carried to this day, or that belief, like doing it about that way, it felt kind of manipulative and gross. That said, it's like the first memory that I have of space, and it's such like a cornerstone of my the way that I think about, you know, this whole stuff. I usually am really focused on human exploration and what that looks like, and I think that it's just this kind of this grounding realization in all of that, that this is a real thing with real risks to it, and and you know, we should take it seriously, but also realize that it's still worth it, you know.
I mean, I think that's probably a lot, you know, people around our age, that's probably their first real memory of any space program. And the poor teachers of America, it's like, let's all roll in. You know, I have a distinct memory of like them rolling in the TV to watch it because Krista McAuliffe was on it. That's her name, right? Yep. And she was a teacher.
Yep.
And it was like, let's all watch the teacher go into space. Then it's like, I have actually, because I have problems, but I have watched the launch kind of recently just to see. And they're very muted when you watch it. They're just like, oh, okay, something happened. And kind of like don't really want to face what actually, and maybe like don't actually know exactly what happened. But it's so filled with joy in the beginning. And then they're just like, okay, we gotta end this. And then, you know, I feel like my memory of it is conflated with Punky Brewster. So I'm like, did that happen to me or did it happen to Punky? But, you know, because they had a whole episode about it. And I just feel like they kind of rolled it away. And they're like, okay, we're not talking about this anymore.
Huh. Interesting. I don't think I've seen that episode of Punky Brewster.
Well, yeah. She, you know, I guess she was obsessed with space or in this. And then you know, it was sort of after school special, like how do children deal with the fact that they were all watching this live?
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Do you know that the Big Bird was supposed to be on the Challenger?
What?
The Big Bird costume was supposed to be on the Challenger, but it ended it didn't work out for some reason. I can't remember. It ended up not being on there.
Oh, but God.
That was
further destroying the children of America.
My God.
Wait, what are you saying? The Big Bird costume?
The
I don't understand. Big Bird.
Sorry, I mean
Big Bird was going to be.
I mean,
what?
I mean the Big Bird. Yeah, sorry, Anne.
Okay,
I didn't mean to be confusing there. Not trying to ruin.
I mean, that's a depressing thought. just the idea of like this crumpled heap of yellow feathers like lying somewhere in this space shuttle. Well, we took the costume off.
This is terrible. But when I first read that, all I could picture was the shuttle blowing up and like feathers shooting out of it.
Oh, that's so dark.
It is. You just see him like it's like glitter like in the sky. It's like, whoa.
God.
I mean, I was going to the American school in London at that time. So I don't know. We didn't watch the launch or anything. I think it probably wasn't the right time with time differences and all of that. But I do have a very distinct memory of my third grade teacher coming in and telling us what had happened. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, I didn't know sort of what it meant or how to process that. I was like, okay, I guess that's a thing that happened.
Yeah.
But it is something that kind of stays with you, that sort of shapes the way that you think about whatever. I don't know. It just embeds in your DNA a little bit.
It's actually, I really like this song. There's a song by Beyonce called XO. And it's a really like romantic song. But the very beginning of it starts off with the like call about the Challenger. And people were like, why did she use that at the beginning? Like, it seems sort of dissonant with what the song is about. I'll play it or something, because it starts with the like mission control talking. It's very weird.
There's a song by The Long Winters. I was just going to look it up. That's all about the Challenger explosion. I heard it. There's a podcast called Song Exploder, and I heard it on there. The Commander Thinks Aloud is the name of the song by The Long Winters. And it's there's that episode of Song Exploder about it, and it's really, really, it's powerful. And hearing his kind of story behind writing it and stuff was great. So it's episode 28 of Song Exploder if you want to go check it out. I'm not even a music person, and I loved that.
Cool.
But you are a space person.
I am, yeah.
Jeremy, do you like science fiction?
Not really. Not a ton. I don't really like fiction movies a ton in general. Like, I don't really go to movies. I don't watch a ton of them. I watch a lot of documentaries. That's kind of my my sweet spot. So that's where I would go to first. But if I'm gonna watch a movie, I would definitely prefer to go with science fiction. I really liked that. What was that recent one with Matt Damon where he went to Mars?
The Martian.
Yeah,
The Martian. That was great. See, I thought about you when I was considering The Martian the other night, because I was like, I bet Jeremy would really like that, because it is very, like, it plays to your interests.
Yeah.
The whole science component and the exploration component.
Yeah.
And sort of the ingenuity that he's forced to assume while he's by himself on a planet for 600 days or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think, you know, not that everything in that movie could happen, obviously, but it's all actually based in some form of science. At least, you know, has some logic to it. But interesting.
Yep. He said that the only deliberate liberty that he took was with the actuality of the storm, because the Mars atmosphere is thin enough that you can't get winds that high. But he made that deliberate choice because he knew he wanted it to be a story about man versus nature. And so there needed to be a precipitating nature incident to that. And I was like, all right, I can go with that if that's the choice that you made to get this all going. But then, yeah, it's very, and the book itself is really deep into the science. Like, I read it all the first time I read the book, I was like, yeah, that's very interesting. And the second time I read the book, I was like, I'm gonna skip all these science bits.
Boop, 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 boop. Let's go to the action.
Skim, 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 skim.
But that's a good movie. And that really, I mean, we've talked about Matt and Ben enough, but I feel like that kind of is the shows that Matt is more of the actor and Ben is more of a star. You know what I mean? Like, meaning like Ben is a better celebrity. I don't think he's a bad actor. He's just a better celebrity. But like the fact that Matt Damon can basically have a, you know, monologue for, you know, most of the movie is really
90 minutes.
Yeah. Really impressive.
Does Ben Affleck still make movies?
Yes, he does. He is going
Batman movies.
Yeah, and he's gonna be in a movie. I don't know what it's called. I can't remember. But he so he's dating Ana de Armas, like in real life, who is in Knives Out. She's, you know, probably 25 or something.
I was gonna say she's way younger than he is.
But they're in a movie directed by Adrian Lyne, who directed like Fatal Attraction and Unfaithful and stuff. So I don't know. It'd be like a hot sex thriller or something like that. So yes, he is still making movies. And I actually, again, we don't need to sidetrack too much on Ben Affleck. I think that he is a good character actor. And I think that he's too, like, they think, oh, he's good looking, so he should be a star. But I think he's a funny character actor, but not a star.
And his personal life is messed up. He's a big enough mess in real life that it makes him interesting as a celebrity.
Yep. Don't be fooled by the rocks that I got. I'm still Jenny from the block. He stars in that video. Anyway, yeah, no, The Martian is great. And that's definitely a movie, like a cable movie, that if it's on, I'm like, yeah, I'll watch it.
It's one of the few movies that I actually purchased that I have on my phone at all times. And every once in a while, I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna watch. So that's my space movies. My space movies are The Martian and Space Camp. And Apollo 13.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent.
And what else? You know, I just watched Alien recently for the first time. It is really good.
I've never seen those either.
The first Alien?
Yes. Okay. I actually enjoyed the first Alien more than I enjoyed Aliens. Although that was good too, but it got a little bit too much like stereotypically 80 action movie at the end for me, where Alien was a very sort of atmospheric kind of thriller thing. That I liked that a lot. So
that
you should watch it, Jer.
That is my dad's like secret girlfriend. He loves Sigourney. Like loves.
I was gonna say the alien lady. No.
I'm a sucker for short hair. So I thought she looked so tough when she gave herself that buzz cut.
You're like, yes.
I've never even seen the movie, but I remember that.
I don't think that's in that movie though. That's in one of the later movies.
Well, it's in the franchise. I don't know what's in what.
In the Alien cinematic universe.
Yeah.
Jeremy's like, G.I. Jane.
Oh, yep. I've definitely seen that movie.
Oh man, Jeremy. Anything else? Any other touch points?
Yeah, I'll try and run through these a little quicker, unless you guys have 6-7 hours.
We got all day, baby.
Speaking of movies, and this is one that I saw at the Science Center here in Seattle on the IMAX screen when it came out. It's called For All Mankind, and it's not the show that's on Disney Plus or Apple TV or whatever it is. But this is a documentary that came out in like. Oh, 86, I think. I was reading about it yesterday just to make sure. But I remember going there, and it just kind of tells the story of the early space program. And I just remember sitting there the whole time and being in awe. And I would have been six. And again, I don't have any memories of my childhood. Challenger, I remember. And this, I remember because I remember crying at that age in the theater because I was just so overtaken by like my awe for what I was seeing and how amazing it was. And then I remember afterwards being so excited and wanting to be an astronaut and just like being obsessed with this concept of like, oh my God, that could be me up in space, floating around, looking back down on Earth, like doing these experiments. And we went and ate lunch in the food court area. And my parents spent the entire time, every single one of these is apparently about how my parents are terrible. My parents spent the entire time explaining to me why I probably would never be an astronaut. I'm sure that what they were trying to do was temper my expectations because my mom is terrified of my feelings being hurt. And so, you know, she wanted to let me down early, I guess. I don't know. But I remember in the same way that I remember being in awe, I remember being heartbroken that day and kind of accepting the fact that I would never be an astronaut. But just knowing that I'm like, there's lots of ways that I can still stay close to this world without actually being an astronaut. And so, I mean, I think that that's a big part of why I have this fascination because it's like a way for me to stay close to this thing that, like, I don't know, it, like, this is going to sound so ooey, but it like speaks to something inside of me. And I love it. So I remember that. And recently, by the way, I took Elliot to go see that movie. They had a screening of it at the Seattle International Film Festival down here. And I took Elliot to go see it. And it was just this great kind of magical moment, at least for me. I don't know how she felt about it. I told her, oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was going to say, I feel like, I don't know, even, you know, when your parents feel super joy about something, like, I think it's contagious. I mean, sometimes you're like, ugh, come on, stop. But yeah. Like, even as a teen, when my parents would be really into space or whatever, like, I always just thought it was kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, just saying this stuff out loud to you guys is kind of making me realize how much of this is wrapped up in the complicated relationship I have with my dad. Because it was like our connecting point, and he was kind of emotionally distant and closed off. But this was one of the things that we had together, like this and Boy Scouts. And so I have so many great memories of it. I remember my dad dragging me out into the middle of nowhere. There's this place in Eastern Washington called the Golden Dale Observatory. And it's like an area that's a dark sky site. So they actually have laws about, you know, street lights and things that would cause light pollution. And he took me down there, and I remember laying on the top of the car, which I thought was the coolest thing in the world, and being freezing cold and being grumpy and not wanting to be there and getting out this pair of binoculars. And, you know, we lay it up on top of the car and just watch a meteor shower for as long as, you know, until I started whining so much that we had to get back in the car. And then we got down on the ground, and my dad pulled out this pair of binoculars and put it up on a tripod, and he pointed it up at the moon. And one of the cool things about looking at it with binoculars is that you can actually see things in 3D. So you can look at the moon, and you can see all the craters and the valleys and the mountains and all the peaks and stuff. I just remember sitting out there with him once the moon came up and watching the moon rise after watching this meteor shower, and then spending some time looking at the moon. And I think about a year and a half ago, I was rooting through my parents' garage because I had a bunch of stuff in there that I didn't know was in there. And so I was grabbing what I needed and then throwing away the rest. And I saw that same pair of binoculars. And I actually took them and took Ellie out a couple times now, and we've gone out and, there I go. We've gone out and we've been able to have those same kind of moments, you know, where we have this, it's like this connection thing. It's just ours. And, you know, I drag her out into the middle of nowhere, and we stare at the stars and watch meteors and look at stuff with the binoculars. And we recently did that out by Roswell. So we were looking for, or not Roswell, Area 51. So we were looking for, you know, looking for UFOs. but yeah, it's turned into this kind of special thing that, that me and E have, which is great.
That's cool.
I have a couple more. Can I do them?
See, my parents are too practical. My parents are like, no, the night is for sleeping.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, we would drive, I've driven 6-7 hours or whatever to look at stuff for, you know, an hour, and then ended up having to drive back.
you're not a practical parent in that way. No. I think the world needs a little bit less practicality in parenting. Yep. When you were saying about the dark area down outside of Green Valley, Arizona, which is a, you know, senior city, senior retirement area. So, you know, you can't rent or buy property until you're 55 down there. Anyway, that's out by Mount Hopkins, which has the Whipple Observatory on that. So the whole of Green Valley, Arizona is a dark area, so no streetlights or anything. So I would go down and visit my grandma over spring break, because that's how I roll for spring break. And since it's a retirement community, like after sunset, there are no cars out on the street. So I would like go for a walk and there's no cars and there's no street lights and it's just black out there. Just a few lights from houses. And I'm like, this is cool and also very spooky.
Yep. Yep. I do. I like to, when I go take out like the final trash on Sunday night, and we do have street lights, but we're a little bit farther out from downtown Austin. And some, you know, if it's clear enough, I'll just like sit up and stare at the stars and you're just like, wow, it's so beautiful. I don't know. Yeah. It's sort of awe-inspiring.
Yeah. When I was 14, I did a summer geology field trip through my school after eighth grade, where we did a week where we drove out to Yellowstone and saw Old Faithful and everything. And so you did lots of geology type stuff, but there was one night when we were driving, because they took us to a rodeo in Wyoming, I think, and we were driving back to our campsite like at midnight, and they stopped the vans and they're like, everybody get out, and we just got out in the middle of nowhere in the foothills of wherever in Wyoming and looked up, and the number of stars in the sky were like nothing I'd ever seen before. Yeah. In the city. Yeah. It's just amazing.
Yep. Yeah. More stars than sky.
Yep.
Yep.
Crazy. That's
crazy. I love it. All right. Lay some more on us, Jay.
So I think the next one that I'll mention is this was Elliot's actually first airplane flight that we'd airplane flight, plane ride, whatever it's called. The first time she flew on a plane was to do this. And I was randomly like browsing Twitter at work and saw something from the Jet Propulsion Laboratory down in California. That is the place where they built, you know, the Curiosity rover. And like, speaking of the Martian, they built all the other rovers that are up there. And they said, oh, there's an open house, you know, limited free tickets, like thing opens at 9, tickets usually are gone by like 9:02, so move quick or whatever. So I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna give it a shot. And I jumped in there and ended up getting tickets. And so I got the most that you could. I got 4 of them, and I'm going, whoever is going with me. And I ended up taking Elliot down there. My parents, God, my parents took the other two and also came down. So, you know, we did it in a day. We got up at, you know, 3 a.m. on Saturday, flew down there, took got a rental car, drove straight out to JPL, spent the whole day there. It was 90 degrees, it was hot. First time Elliot had been in weather like that. First time she'd driven on a plane, was going on almost no sleep, and she loved it so much. And she had this Lego astronaut t-shirt on, and there were so many people that were excited to so many people that worked at JPL that were excited to see a little girl there. And so she got all this attention. And at one point, like, I looked over and there was like 4 people that worked at JPL just like standing around her, asking her all these questions, showing her stuff, taking her around. And it was just like, it was so cool to see. She laid on the ground and they drove a rover over her. I have this funny picture of her doing that, and she's like bright red because it was so hot. But it was just this, yeah, it was fun. We got to go in the, you know, in the clean rooms where they're building, and they built Curiosity, and they're building these probes that are going out into space, and you know, talk to the people that are building them and working on the projects. So it was fun. It was a really great time. And Elliot,
I would do that.
Yeah. It happens every year. I mean, probably not for a little bit, but
maybe not this year.
But yeah, it happens sometimes a couple times a year, and tickets are free. You just got to get in and grab them when you can.
That's cool.
Pretty cool. Yeah. I think probably one of the coolest memories that I have, that I will always cherish, is when the eclipse that happened, I think it was 2 years ago.
It was 2017, because it was right when Bridget started kindergarten, because my parents went to Nashville to see it.
Yeah. Yeah. So It was the path of totality, which is the area that is completely 100%, you know, in the dark, basically. It was pretty close to us. It was about a 6 hour drive, 5-6 hour mm-hmm. drive. And mm-hmm. I didn't really want to go. Like, I hate crowds. If I go to a movie, I will wait until, you know, 3 or 4 weeks after opening weekend, because I just don't want to deal with like all the craziness.
Oh, yeah. Like Wednesday at 1 p.m. Yeah. That seems like a really good movie time to me.
Yeah. So, you know, there was it was a game time decision right up until the very last minute. But what tipped me over is every single astronomer or, you know, any astronaut, any of those people that I followed on Twitter or, you know, read their stuff or heard anything from said, if you can go see this, go see it. Because it can't be described. And so after hearing that so many times, I was like, all right, I'm going to go. So it was early on a Monday morning. No, it was in the middle of the day on a Monday. And we left Seattle at like 10 p.m. on a Sunday, and we drove all the way down 5-6 hours. We slept in the front yard of Mike's former prison. Cellmate, big country, down in Salem. Somebody that I'd never met before, but knew from online. We went down and slept in his front yard.
Squatted on his front yard.
Yeah, he invited us. He said, yeah. But Elliot goes. The next morning, we got up, and she just thought sleeping in a car was the coolest thing ever. And she's like, "Dad, I think I want to move into a car once I move out of the house. I want to move into a car." I'm like, all right, well, that's, you know, that could be a real rich man, poor man scenario.
Yes, it totally is.
We'll give it a shot. We can see. So I'll be interested.
The reality of the scenario is a little different when you're 7 than from when you're an adult.
I mean, all I wanted was an RV when I was a kid. I was like, what is wrong with this? You get to travel around and live here.
Well, I hate RVs so much. I can't stand them. So we were down there. We got up, went to Starbucks, and then went out to we went to the library in Salem because they had a few activities out there for kids and some other stuff. So we were hanging out there waiting for it to happen. And I have to say, I knew it was going to be cool, but it was honestly breathtaking. When it happened, everybody kind of cheered, and then it was just dead silent. I mean, there was probably 1,000 people there, and it was just dead silent. And I like immediately just like I like felt a sensation in my body. I started tearing up. It was one of those, you know, you start seeing the stars, the crickets start chirping. It feels noticeably cold. And it's just, it feels like you're in a computer simulation. And it's, you know, to go back to the universe being this, you know, massive expanse, and it kind of helps put things in perspective for me. I don't know if it's ever felt as real as it did in that moment. And you could hear other people that were, you know, maybe not necessarily from the conversations that I had heard, excited about being there or wanting to be there, you know, kind of going through an experience of their own. And it was so powerful and cool and amazing. And I will, for the rest of my life, if I have a chance, I will go to an area where I can see that happen. Cause I,
when is the next one?
It's in a couple of years, and I think it's going to be going across Texas.
Come on down.
Ooh, that could be fun.
I know. Yeah, we'll teach you get together.
Yeah, it was
like that.
So I actually have a tattoo that, like, the first tattoo that I ever got was right after that, when I was, you know, what, 35. Elliot and Christy just gave me an appointment card for a tattoo for my birthday. That was in August, and my birthday's in September. And they didn't tell me what the tattoo was. And I didn't know what it was until I got there, and they started. And it was a design that Elliot picked out, that is an eclipse, basically. And then she wrote Never Give Up underneath it in her handwriting. And it is so cool. It is such a cool reminder to be able to look down. You know, I see it. It's on my forearm. I see it every day. And it's so...
That is some trust you got going on.
Exactly. I know. Especially for a first tattoo. The guy that was doing it was like, okay. I actually connected. I went and saw Phyllis down there when we were looking at the eclipse. Phyllis was down there with Josh and Gus. And after the eclipse happened, we went and drove over to where they were and hung out with them for a while.
Huh. Small world.
And then it took 14 hours to get home.
Oh my God. That makes me panicky.
Yeah.
It was.
You know, it's not the time in the car. It's the needing to pee.
Yes. Yeah.
You know when you, like, I put it in Waze and it said 6 hours. I'm like, oh, perfect. I can't believe the traffic's that good. And then I sat there and I looked down 20 minutes later and it's 7 hours. And then 30 minutes later, it's 8 hours. And then, like, it just kept on going up the closer I got to Seattle.
That's kind of like. Like you were saying, you don't like crowds. Like everybody knows Hillary loves a good party. I like being with people, but I really don't like crowds either. Like, and part of the reason why, beyond just like having mild claustrophobia, is more like the process of getting out of a situation really stresses me out. Like, I need to envision myself getting home and like, how is that going to happen? And if it's going to take a really long time, it's like, that's not worth it to me. Like that, I can't.
Like, leaving after community fireworks on the 4th of July is the worst.
We went a few years ago. This was like before I had kids, so it was a long time ago. We went to Willie Nelson's picnic on the 4th of July, which is fun, except like I don't really love country music. I like some country music, but not like enough to go to a festival. So it was like a bunch of smaller acts, and then Willie Nelson capped it off. At like midnight, I'm tired. They had run out of food at this place. Like, I'm like, I just want to go home. And you had to like leave and line up and get on a bus to drive to your car. And I was like, this is too many steps. Like, this is like annoying. And I think at some point I was like, we got to go. I'm done. We got to go. I got to get out of here. I got to beat the crowds.
There's a very weird time warp thing where the time that it takes to get from your car to the venue is way shorter than the time it takes to get from the venue back to the car at the end of it.
And you
don't
tired.
Understand how that works.
I hate it.
Or the way back from Disneyland to where we parked the car was so far.
Oh my gosh. Dave and I took the kids to the San Antonio Rodeo because my friend was performing there. And then I'm putting Dave on blast on this because he had like dropped us off and then parked the car or whatever. He didn't like take a picture of where he parked the car, and it was just one of those like mass parking lots. And we were walking around for like 10 minutes and I was so pissed. And I really try not to get mad at Dave in front of the kids. Like, I don't like to fight in front of them that much. And I just was like, Bridget and I are leaving. We're going over here to go look for the car. And I was telling, she was like, are you mad? And I'm like, yes, I'm very upset with your father right now. I am really upset with him. I was like, okay.
But that's something that has to happen to everybody at least once in their lifetime, is that you have to legitimately get lost in a parking lot. All right. Well, I figured that we couldn't go through this without some genuine astronomy facts.
Yes.
Would you like to hear some planet facts?
The
interesting things. I'm going to go over to my space facts spreadsheet. Did you know that Mercury has wrinkles?
No.
Because it has a molten iron core, and it's cooling and contracting, and so the surface of the planet has, over time, developed wrinkles called lobate scarps, which can be a mile high and hundreds of miles long. It's the only other planet besides Earth that seems to have, like, tectonic shifting, which gave it wrinkles.
Aww.
Also, this is super cool. Mercury has a really elliptical orbit around the sun and a slow rotation, so that the sun appears to rise briefly, then set, and then rise again from some of the places on its surface.
Wow.
And the same thing happens in reverse at sunset.
Wow.
That is awesome.
I think is cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. It's interesting. Well,
yeah, do over. let's give this another shot. Man, that would be great for photographers.
Yes. Like, oh shit, yeah. I wasn't ready.
Golden hour is like,
I know, I was gonna say,
golden,
I missed golden
three or
hour.
4 hours.
Although I think I could be totally wrong because I'm just remembering off the top of my head. I think a day on Mercury is 88 Earth days. So you would have a while. Sunset takes a while.
A year. A year is 88 days.
So is it?
Yeah. Oh, wait.
Oh, yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
Wait, how does this work?
It says,
a day on the surface of Mercury lasts 176 Earth days, but then it says a year on Mercury is just 88 days long.
Yes. So it takes 88 days to go around the sun, but it's spinning much more slowly.
Oh.
So it takes 167 days to spin once.
Not a lot of sunsets then.
Nope.
But maybe golden hour is like a couple years long.
Speaking of long rotations, the only planet that rotates clockwise instead of counterclockwise around the sun is Venus.
Oh, that bitch.
So it's, yep, it goes the opposite direction. And one rotation, so one day on Earth takes, or one day on Venus is 243 Earth days. But it's only 225 days to go around the sun. So a year on Venus is shorter than a day. On Venus.
Weird.
So weird.
See, this, not to get like stonery at all, but like time is so weird and it's such like a construct, but it's not. And I can't, that's another thing, like distance and size, but also time, like really just like it, like in space, boggles my mind.
More interesting facts about Venus. Even though Mercury is closer to the sun, Venus is hotter than Mercury. Its average surface temperature is 864 degrees Fahrenheit. That's because it has a really thick atmosphere, which creates a big greenhouse gas effect. It's like 96% carbon dioxide, I think, is the... along with some clouds of sulfuric acid in the Venusian atmosphere. So don't breathe deeply when you go down there. And also that its atmospheric pressure is 90 times greater than that of Earth.
God.
Or the same pressure if you went a kilometer down in Earth's oceans.
Wow.
Yeah, make sure to bring some gum on that flight, I guess.
Yeah, so like your basketball, your vertical is going to be very poor on Venus.
And they've landed a thing on Venus. They, the Russians. The Russians. We, humanity. There we go. Have landed a thing. It lasted for like 10 minutes.
Through the atmosphere? Oh, and before it got crushed.
There's pictures from the surface. It's crazy.
I like it.
Yeah,
it's cool.
It crashed there, but still was able to take a picture.
I mean, it sacrificed its robot life.
Yes.
Mars has the largest dust storms in the solar system. Just ask Matt Damon about that. This was really cool. Mars has two moons, and eventually one of them, Phobos, is going to be torn apart by Mars's gravitational forces, and it'll become a ring. So Mars will have a ring around it. I mean, and eventually, it's going to take 20 to 40 million years for that to happen.
Sure.
So none of us is going to see it.
Well, not with that attitude.
But Jupiter is twice as big as all the other planets combined. One of the websites.
Wow, really?
One of the websites I was looking at kept using basketball comparisons. So if the Earth was a grape, Jupiter would be a basketball.
Wow.
And the most vivid surface feature of Jupiter, of course, is the Great Red Spot. And that's actually a storm that's twice the size of the Earth that has been going on for hundreds of years. They think like 350 years, maybe, that storm has been in action. And even though it's the largest planet, it's a gas giant, so it's really light. So it rotates the fastest. So a Jupiter day is only 9 hours and 55 minutes.
Wow.
It's spinning like a
ton.
Wow.
This science gets into this. We don't have any rockets that are powerful enough to get out into the far reaches of the solar system. But back in 1962, with that 1962 computational power, the scientists calculated how we could use Jupiter's gravity to slingshot spacecrafts further out. So basically, we're skipping our probes and stuff off the surface of Jupiter's gravity to like fling them out there. I think that is totally, cool. I mean, that's sort of one of the plot points in, was it The Martian? Oh yeah, they were going to slingshot around Earth and go back out to get him. And that was the only way they could do it in the time period. But it's real. I like it.
There's a probe that we learned about when we were down at JPL called Juno that's currently exploring. It's in orbit around Jupiter. And it's going to run out of fuel basically a year from today in 2021. It's going to run out of fuel and crash into the atmosphere. But they loved it because there's like a little Lego person attached to the outside of it. And everybody was pointing that out to Elliot when we were down there at JPL.
And you brought this up a couple of times, but I watched Apollo 13 last night and this morning, and I cried because that's what I do every single, like literally every single time I watch Apollo 13 when they had the wide shot and he says, you know, good to see you, Houston, or whatever. Always cry, like immediate tears. But there are parts of it where they're doing the math just on like graph paper or whatever. You know, they're like, check my math. I think I have it right or whatever. And it is so crazy. They're just like using pencil and paper to do math.
Yep.
And it's so cool because I'm only okay at math, but that's like very complex math that they're having to do quickly. And they have to get it right because if you don't, then you fuck it up and you die.
I love that scene in that movie where they have to get like a round filter to fit in a square filter hole, and they just get a big box of everything that's on the ship and dump it on a table. Like that all really happened, and it makes me think of like an interview question at Google or something. Like they would dump this file out in the
It reminds me of like I remember I tried out to be in the like gifted and talented. It was called Explorations or something, the gifted and talented program, and I'm such a like linear thinker that I'm not creative, and it was like draw a house or like what would you do in these little windows, and I drew a house. Like I was like, fine, I'll draw a house, like this is fun. And you're supposed to get like super creative with it, like how can you bend your mind to work in a way outside of the box but also like solves the problem. And I don't know. I just think it's really cool because my brain does not work like that. And
you said, here's the box. I know.
Isn't this great? It's a box.
The other scene like that in the movie is when Gary Sinise is running the simulations on starting up the power again. And they have to go through all the different sequences to, you know, what is it? The same amount of power that you use to run a vacuum cleaner is all they have. And every time they go over the limit, they're like, God damn it, and have to start again. And he just kept trying and trying and trying.
I know.
Stubbornness.
This actually, I don't love Gary Sinise. I mean, he's fine, but he's not my favorite. But he's really good in this. Like, I think that he's very just how he's supposed to be, just kind of like a workhorse that solves the problem.
Yep. He would have been better than Kevin Bacon if he was the one in space.
He really would. Oh, it's so good, though. I mean, I forgot how, like, scientifically they talk throughout the whole thing and don't really explain it. I mean, occasionally they will do an explainer, like we need to hear from them within the 4-minute window, you know, exposition, but it's really scientifically oriented and just I don't know, very cool.
Cool. More planet facts. Saturn would float on water.
What?
Because if for however we could manage this to put Saturn on a real big lake, it would float.
Wow.
Maybe we could put it on Jupiter.
Water.
I don't know. Wow.
It has 82 confirmed moons. I think it has the most moons, confirmed moons anyway, of all the planets.
Man.
And I talked about Jupiter's great red spot. Saturn has a great white spot, but we can only see it once every 30 years, because that is how Saturn's rotation works. And the most recent time you could see it was a month ago.
Oh, wow.
This past June. And so we can't see it for another 30 years.
Uh-oh.
So come back in 2050.
Yeah, I'm not making
it
that far.
And we'll look for the Great White Swan. Yep.
I don't even know about the next couple months, man. It's not looking good.
Saturn has these 82 moons, and its largest moon, Titan, is where we should be checking for aliens, because it's the only sort of planet that seems like it has clouds and a dense atmosphere with evidence of what they call stable bodies of surface liquid.
Okay.
So the idea is that it's the most close to Earth and that it could support possibly life. I do not know why they're so hung up on water. I mean, I understand because they think you have to have water to have life. I just don't understand this definition of life.
Yeah.
Who says that it has to be water? Maybe it's life that survives on liquid nitrogen. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think they're being very narrow in their thinking about what life could encompass. But anyway, I think the most likely to have life like us.
Yeah, that makes it carbon-based life or whatever.
I think
they also say Europa, it might be a good place, one of the moons of Jupiter, because it's basically a big ice moon, but it's got oceans underneath the ice. And so
it's just because it's named after you.
I know. Yeah.
I think, with all those moons, can you imagine the werewolf population down there? it's out of control. They're wolves more often than humans. They're probably every 30 years or whatever, they turn into a human for 20 minutes.
It's not one of my favorite movies, but because Contact is a dumb movie. Like, it is a dumb movie, and I've watched it recently, and I've talked about it.
I really liked it.
But yes, I really...
At the time.
I really liked it. I love the science part at the very beginning. Well, when she hears it, and then they kind of, like, are trying to triangulate all, like, confirm it. And then they it's, like, spooky because they play spooky music, and James, what's his face? James Woods there, and he's like the CIA guy, and it's like Hitler opening the 36 games, and it's like, whoa, are they Nazis in space? But it's just because, again, like the time, this is the first satellite broadcast. But I like that they sort of play with the idea that the aliens that are sending down this technology are not, like, they think in a different way than we do and aren't necessarily, you know, if it's real, they aren't necessarily thinking about oxygen and water or anything. They're like melding dimensions. Anyway, I thought it's very spooky, but cool.
You don't,
but corny, but good.
You don't like that movie?
I don't like the end of that movie because I think it's dumb that they're like, is it faith? Or I don't know. It just, it seems sort of like corny at the end.
It gets really metaphysical.
Yes. Yeah.
At the end. I don't remember any of that. I only remember the first part.
No, the first part is really cool. It's actually also a really long movie, which is kind of annoying. But and Matthew McConaughey is
I think we said the last time we talked about it, he was terribly really miscast in that movie,
really bad. But the part when she discovers it and how exciting and thrilling it is, and I think it's an eminently watchable movie that kind of falls apart at the end. But there is a part that I think about a lot when she goes into space, and kind of, Jeremy, like what you were saying, where she said they should have sent a poet. They shouldn't have sent a scientist, because it's just so beautiful and you like kind of can't capture it. I mean, obviously you need science, but like just capturing what it feels like to see another galaxy is amazing.
Yes.
Should have sent a scientist and a poet. I don't understand why we have to have one person.
I know. It's not a binary choice.
All right, everybody, get your giggles out.
Okay.
The only planet that rotates on its side is Uranus.
It's just funny. It is. It's never not funny. And when
we can call it Uranus.
Oh, no, give me a break.
But come on. Let's just go with this. So it rotates on its side. And this is because back whenever, millions of years ago, an Earth-sized asteroid smashed into it, like pool ball type smashing and actually knocked it sideways. So it's technically, it's tilted 98 degrees relative to, you know, the plane of the solar system. For comparison, Earth is tilted 23 degrees. So Uranus is rotating on its side. Yep, never not funny. And it has 27 known moons, and 18 of the moons orbit around its equator. So they orbit up and down relative to our plane. And that's because it probably had those moons at the time that it got knocked by the big asteroid. And so when it flipped on its side, they flipped with it, or they went with it. So then the rest of the moon, are on the normal plane. So they think that these moons were captured after the collision at some point. So it has like a matrix of moons rotating around it. I think that's very cool. Oh, and these 27 moons are named after characters from Shakespeare and Alexander Pope. So there's like Juliet and Titania and all that stuff. Cool. That was a very cool literary thing. All right. Neptune has only completed one full orbit of the sun since we discovered it in 1846.
Wow.
Because it's
lazy.
Orbit is, yes.
I don't want to
just don't plan it. Because it takes 165 years for it to go around the sun. So it's only been able to do that one full time since we've known that it's there. And it is the windiest planet. It has clouds of frozen methane that whip across it at 1,200 miles an hour, which is pretty much the top speed of a Navy fighter jet. And for comparison, Earth's strongest winds are about 250 miles per hour. Wow. So about 20% as fast as Neptune's winds. So don't bring your umbrella. It's going to turn inside out.
That's a lot.
Doesn't
of miles
matter
per hour.
If you have a really good umbrella. Still.
Yep. And Voyager 2 is the only spacecraft that's ever flown past Neptune.
Wow.
It's the only one that's gotten out
there. It's now in deep space.
One, I know, it's going off to see what it can see elsewhere.
That's crazy.
It'll get back to us in, you know, 5 million years and tell us what it sees. And because I am a Gen Xer, I will include Pluto as a planet.
Oh. Come on.
I was curious if you're going to do it.
I mean, I understand why it was reclassified, because it's only 2/3 the size of our moon. So it's
tiny.
It's a little baby. Its largest moon, Charon, orbits Pluto in 153 hours, and that's the exact amount of time that it takes Pluto to complete a rotation. So 153 hours is one Pluto day. So because of this, Charon doesn't rise or set, because it's like rotating at the exact, or it's revolving, revolutioning. it's orbiting at the exact same speed that the planet is turning. So it's always in the exact same spot in Pluto's sky, and the same side of it always faces Pluto. And that's a state called tidal locking. Like, they have a name for this. I think it's very, very cool. All right, so those are my planet facts. I did also, we were talking about, you know, light and distance and stuff. So I did include a little blurb about a light year, which is very confusing to people. It's the distance that light travels in 1 year, which is approximately 6 trillion miles. So our sun is 93 million miles away. So it takes light from the sun 8.5 minutes to reach us.
Wow.
And the nearest star to us, Proxima Centauri, is 4.2 light years away. So the light that we see from it right now shows the star as it was 4.2 years ago. So to Jeremy's point, if something happened and it blew up like 3 years ago, we wouldn't see that
until
for another year plus. I think that's so cool. And if we decided on our road trip to get into the Odyssey and drive to Proxima Centauri in a car or something at 70 miles an hour, it would take us 356 billion years to get there.
A little bit.
Wow.
A little bit of time.
Time, man.
As long as we can stop for breaks, I'm fine. And my final space fact, in space, no one can hear you.
That's true.
That's from Alien. That's the tagline in Alien. But it's true.
It's true, yeah.
Yep, it actually is.
Explosions wouldn't work. All that sci-fi stuff will be ruined for you.
I know. Armageddon is just... You find out that there are some slight problems with the science in that movie.
Ugh, I saw that one with my dad, and I remember when, again, Ben Affleck and Liv Tyler were, like, canoodling. That was the point in which I said, I have to go to the bathroom right now. I can't watch this with you.
I thought you were going to say they were canoodling in real life. They never
You know, I think every actor probably does canoodle in real life, but, like, I don't think it was ever. I'm just starting rumors.
All right, so those are astronomy facts. I don't think that we need to spend time taking the what kind of planet are you quiz, but I took a bunch of them, and so I'm going to post that on our Facebook group so that we can find out what kind of planet matches our personalities.
I got Venus. Spoiler alert. And I really wanted...
I came up with Venus twice, and I don't know that I think that that's right.
I think it's like ladies. This is the lady planet.
I don't know.
How does it know?
But it had very... Because you answer a lot of questions about space and astronomy and things that you like
cake.
And then it knows.
What kind of cake and cookies you
like? I got Mercury.
All right. Oh, that's
pretty
good.
But the little description I think is actually pretty spot on, and it will fit the fact that this is going to be a 2-hour show. You have a lot to say. You have a lot to say. So friends think of you as chatty. But a wise friend. Your ability to carry conversations makes you a great person to make connection with. Your curiosity may be annoying to some, but you enjoy asking questions, so you don't care what people think. Surprisingly accurate.
You know, I'm actually reading, I mean, I'm a Saturn gal. I like a ring. That's what I wanted, but I'm reading the description of Venus, and it does kind of describe me a little bit, and I'm kind of annoyed.
Does it?
You tend to depend on your charm to meet new people and strengthen these newfound friendships. Although you believe in balance, you wouldn't necessarily make a sacrifice to achieve it. This is like horoscopes, but that is kind of accurate. So my short-term charm tends to work in this.
Well, I'll be interested to see what planet matches T-Shirt's personalities.
Yes.
I mean, who is most like Uranus?
You know what I was going to say? I thought of this once we started recording, but we did this thing at work for like a fun, I don't know, we did it for one of our happy hours or something. But there's a test and it has a list of equipment. It'll be, you know, like a gun, a fuel tank, an oxygen tank. And there's a scenario where you're on the moon and you're trying to get from like one point to another point. And then you're supposed to rank the items in which order that you think they are for importance. And then you score it based off of that. It's way more fun than I just made it sound. But oh, it would be a fun...
If you need a gun,
well,
then something has gone horribly wrong.
And this is an actual test that NASA uses. So it would be fun. I should put it on the... Well, somebody will put it on the Facebook page because I want to see. I want to see how people do.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, goodness.
All right. So question of the week this week. Would you go on the Mars mission? Are we still doing the Mars mission?
It's up in the air.
And by Mars mission, I mean...
Come on.
I'm going to gloss right over that bad joke. And it's the mission where they send people to Mars, basically one-way trip.
Yeah.
You're never coming back. Would you do it? Hillary?
No. I know. I like should have curiosity, but this is when I'm like, I want to see what other people are doing. I want to watch it. I don't need to go. You don't want me there.
Okay. Jeremy?
Yeah. I would go. It would be scary and it would be hard to say goodbye to my family, but I would probably go do it.
I would too.
Yeah.
Well, one thing I'm learning about myself these past 4 or 5 months, I am very good at being alone.
You're like, I can do this.
No problem.
Christy's response to that is always, if there's no Netflix and no cheese, I'm out. But Christy's cousin was actually approached to be one of the first people on Mars by Elon Musk. And she said no.
Wow. Well, I don't know if I would trust Elon Musk that much, but
well, yeah. Thankfully,
actually, I had this thought.
Thankfully, Elon's not actually in charge of SpaceX.
No.
It's a woman.
How
it's
do
a
you
woman.
Feel...
This.
How do you feel about Elon?
Oh, I hate him. Yeah, he is a trash person. Yes,
I agree. I mean, but he has got the whole SpaceX thing going.
And
on.
his like fan boys are worse than he is.
Yeah,
toxic.
Oh my god,
yeah. Toxic.
Yeah.
And what has he been doing to his
he family? he has the like face, what is it called, the you know, I always talk about the Polar Express where it's like looks real but like is
oh
uncanny. Yeah, he has an uncanny valley face. Like it is, I'm like, what happened?
It's like that mobster the Irishman on Netflix.
Yes it's so creepy. Where it's like close to real but it's not actually.
Are you a puppet?
And it's kind of like Jeff Bezos, where you're like, I saw you a few years ago when you did not have that hair, mm-hmm. or, you know, that bod, I guess. Not one that I'm like attracted to, but they've, you know, hired a trainer or gotten surgery or whatever. They're all jacked now.
No, I'm not a fan of bodies when they can be described as swole.
No, I don't like them.
Yeah, Bezos is building his own rockets, too. I don't know.
This is
how they're all supervillains, man. It's not not a good sign.
Maybe give money to the like pandemic situation that's going on, as opposed to like ridiculous
priorities. Yeah. All right, so Tishy friends, please tell us: would you go on the one-way mission to Mars? Why or why not?
Yeah,
we'd like to know.
I'm curious. I feel like it's a Rorschach test or something. Mm-hmm. Okay, I have one question or one little story that I was going to tell that didn't quite fit into this, but.
Okay.
This is, I got permission from my mom to tell this story. So my mom, Kathleen, who is wonderful, she has a job where she works with authors. She's a media escort in Dallas. So if an author comes into town, she is their go-to person in Dallas. She takes them to their various like media appointments and is just like their, a media escort. So she worked with Jim Lovell. And I don't remember the timeline. I don't know if this was... I feel like it was after Apollo 13 came out because I was aware of him. And I don't think I was really aware of him before Tom Hanks portrayed him. Anyway, so they're doing something somewhere. And my mom had to go to the bathroom. So my mom goes to the bathroom, comes out. It's like, oh, you know, hi. Like, let's go ahead and go to the next appointment. And she walks ahead of Jim. And then Jim taps my mom on the shoulder and says, Kathleen, your skirt is tucked into your pantyhose. So Jim Lovell, you know, of Apollo 13, Tom Hanks fame, saw my mom's rear end tucked in her full glory. So anyway, she said I could tell it's our touch with a space system, space shuttle organization.
That's
good job, Kathleen.
I mean, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
He was very nice. He was not crude or he was very nice to her about it. And she really liked him. And she'll be honest about, you know, sometimes people that she's like, they were nice or they were fine. She's like me. If it was fine, you know that they were like not great. But she had nothing but very kind words to say about Jim Lovell, especially after that.
Yeah, Gene Kranz once told me that I had a piece of lettuce stuck between my teeth. So I get it. I get it. I get it. I'll have to
They're
talk to your mom
man.
About it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. With that, I guess we're semi wrapping up, you know, our space talk, but it was wonderful. For Tishy recommends. Actually, we're keeping on. Jeremy, what you got?
Oh, yeah. So I just put two things on here. One of them is... If you haven't already, you can check out NASA TV. You can just Google NASA TV and there will be a bunch of links to it. But it is 24/7. There's educational materials on there. They live broadcast spacewalks when they're doing that and kind of explain to you what's going on and have people there walking you through it. They show every major rocket launch. It's really cool. So if you want to know more or want to just be captivated by the awesomeness of space, that's always a really solid place to go. And I actually love it because during launches, they have like the media stream, which is just the science stuff. and not the mm-hmm. weird like commentators from SpaceX or mm. whatever trying to make jokes or
not the color man.
Yes, yeah. So it's just actual.
It's like the raw
rocket scientist.
Audio.
Yeah.
Cool.
And then the other one is it's good for anyone, but if you're just space curious and kind of on the fringes.
It's a new sexuality.
There's a really, really great series called One Strange Rock. It originally came out on Netflix, and it's with Will Smith. And they pick like a subject. So one of them is air or like the atmosphere or something. And they jump back and forth between, you know, interviews with scientists and people down here on the ground, and then interviews with astronauts talking about kind of their perspective from space. And it's so well done, and visually it is amazing and beautiful. I mean, they have these amazing sweeping shots of like the Amazon rainforest and basically the river of clouds that is above the Amazon that kind of feeds the Earth, and amazing shots of the Earth from space. And it's so well done. Cool. So it's on Disney Plus now. I looked it up last night. So definitely cool. Go check it out, because it's interesting even for people that aren't space nerds.
Cool. Very cool. And obviously...
Space camp. Duh.
We will free on YouTube. Yeah, celebrate it. Watch and think of Anne. That's it.
There's at the end of the movie, they have what they, you know, is standard for space shuttle movies, where they've lost touch with the space shuttle as the teenagers are piloting it through the atmosphere for reentry, and they're like, Atlanta, this is control. Do you read us? Atlanta, this is control. And then Tate Donovan says, control, this is Atlanta. And the whole control room just erupts in cheers, and people are crying. And I'm like,
they did it. They did it. Oh, yeah.
Tate Donovan and Leah Thompson brought those kids back safely. Tom Skerritt is so happy.
Oh, Tom Skerritt, I love him. He's also in Contact. I mean, man, he's the best.
You know, we are Tom Skerritt stans.
We really are.
On this podcast.
I ran into that guy in a Starbucks, and I didn't even know. So I didn't. He lives out here. And he lived by Christie's old boss, the super rich guy. And so we were out there doing something, and we were at a Starbucks, and this was when Vine was a thing, and I like desperately wanted to be like a Vine guy. Surprising, I know. and so one of my things that I would do, God, this is so embarrassing to say. I would just walk around like a Starbucks and like jam my phone into people that are like having meetings or whatever. just see how close I could get to make it uncomfortable, like with my phone out.
Jeremy.
And so I went over to this table and I like basically did that with my camera. And then I was looking at it later and somebody was watching it or something. And they were like, oh my God, that's Tom Skerritt. And I was like, who's Tom Skerritt? And then they showed me, and it's like, oh yeah, it is. I guess that's Tom Skerritt.
Do you still have it?
Probably, yeah. I should go try and find it.
Please find it.
I downloaded all my Vines when they shut down. God, I miss that. I miss Vine. Yeah.
TikTok, I guess, is the next step. I know.
For all the reasons that it, you know, everybody's been talking about, obviously I can't, but before all of that, you know, I opened it up, and after seeing, teenagers dance around, three or four times, I just decided, I'm too old
like, I'm
for
good.
This. If I feel like I can't do this on the bus and I have to like hide the screen, it was one of the first, social media things that I really felt like I kind of aged out of.
Yeah. I know. You're like, I'm 1,000 years old. I can't do this anymore. mine is decidedly, my suggestion or recommends is decidedly not space oriented, and it's a little depressing. But I've consumed two. Well, you know, I'm sort of still mourning the loss of the summer games. I finally watched Athlete A on Netflix, which Netflix has been pushing on me, and I'm like, okay, fine, I'm in a place where I can watch it, and it's really well done. It's about USA Gymnastics, particularly obviously the women, and it's very depressing, but it's good to see these women kind of standing up for themselves. But what I really also liked this week, and it was a 7-episode series, and I just blew through. It was a 30 for 30 series called Heavy Metals. And it's a little bit more focused. It's less about Larry Nassar, though they do talk about him towards the end. But it's more about the Carollis and their history and, you know, it's matter of fact. I mean, there's, you know, obviously some opinions, but it's kind of like how they started with Nadia and then defecting and then, you know, having the ranch and all that and kind of talking about their personalities. I thought it was really good. If you're interested in gymnastics or the Crowleys in general, it's really good. And it's tough. And it's just funny because until 3 years ago, I was like, he's amazing. You know, he's this big bear character, even though you kind of knew something was wrong. And it's like, oh no, they were pretty abusive. They were pretty bad people.
Maybe the moral of the story is you just shouldn't trust a man with a mustache.
Kind
of. Except
probably.
For Tom
Skerritt. Yes.
Probably
yes.
Just don't trust men.
I think that's the wiser choice on that. Yeah. But also, Marta, his wife, was, you know, it's the yin and the yang of it. She was the quiet one, but she was also the one that was like not letting them eat pretty much. Anyway, but it is well done. 30 for 30 does good podcasts. And I'm enjoying it. It's sort of tough because it's like about abuse of children, but it's very interesting.
I'm enjoying it. It's about abuse of children.
Well, and it was one of those where like I'd be cooking and Rory would be watching TV. And I was like, everybody, I have my AirPods on. Don't bother me. Just don't talk to me. This is what I'm listening to. But yeah, it was good. Okay, the shameless Amazon plug of the week. Jeremy, what is this?
Oh, yeah. This is my summer short, and I'm so excited that I found it, because I've been wearing these for the last 3 or 4 years. I've been wearing these Lee, I don't know, they're just like straight, no, kind of normal gray shorts. But I want a short to be actual short. Like, I want they're not called longs. I definitely want it above the knee. And but I prefer like as short as possible. So what I've been wearing for the last few years is a 9-inch inseam. I went and looked, and it seemed like kind of the standard shorty short level is 5 inches. So yeah. I got some 5-inch mm-hmm. shorts, and I loved them. But Christy was concerned. And one thing that I have learned in my old age is that I should listen to her, even when I don't necessarily agree. So I decided to send those back, and I went with a 7-inch, and it's so perfect. So the plug is for specifically, it's an Amazon brand, which feels gross, but Good Threads Men's 7-inch inseam hybrid short. So I have two shorts that I have that I bought a bunch of for the summer. And one of them is kind of a more standard, like, I don't know, chino or whatever, like normal fabric. But these hybrid shorts, they are so good for, I would say, adventuring. Like it's definitely athleisure. Like you could wear them to the mall, but you could also wear them on a hike. You could wear them on a jog, and you could even go swimming in them. So they're this synthetic, you know, material. They're stretchy. They're comfortable. They're nice and short. Let the old legs breathe a little bit. I'm ecstatic about it. I love them. So
in the picture, it sort of looks like you're going to like an English boarding school.
Yeah. 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 Well, that's sort of the look that I'm going for. So
I like it. I like it.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Well, I'm looking, he's got some white sneakers on.
Yeah.
And I thought they were platform sneakers from the image.
It's a rough.
But it's just the reflection picture on the shiny floor.
I don't tuck shirts in.
No, these are good.
I can see why they would have to.
7-inch is good. It's long enough so that you don't look like a 70s basketball player.
Yeah.
But it's short enough so that it doesn't look like you're wearing your board shorts around.
Yeah, it's not obscene. Not my butt cheeks aren't hanging out the bottom. But I'm gonna have to get some of these colored ones. I just have a couple, but they're black, so maybe I'll
get the camo ones.
Oh hell no.
No. Oh, those are good looking. Okay, Jeremy, while you're at it, you want to take us into housekeeping?
Yes. Yes. Let me scroll down to it. Okay. Here's how you can get involved, my friends. Please rate and review the podcast. You can go to iTunes or whatever. And as people always say, it helps other people see the podcast. That'd be awesome. You could do it. If you want to say something mean, that's fine, but still give us 5 stars.
Exactly.
This is like the first time I've been on the show. Give us 5 stars, guys.
You are extremely important to this podcast.
Okay. Yes.
We're going to put a link in the show notes to those fantastic shorts that I just mentioned. What you can do is you can click on that link and you will go to Amazon.com and then you can save, even if you do it in the mobile web browser on your phone, you can save that to your home screen as a little icon. Put it on another, doesn't have to be on the first page if it's going to bother you to see it on there. Put it on the second or third page, but somewhere where you can get to it. Don't put it in a folder for sure. And then anytime you want to shop on Amazon, just tap that button. And when you do, whatever you buy, there'll be a couple pennies that come to the Tishy crew. So do it.
We're going to space, guys. Yeah. We need your help. We need to,
many,
build up a fund
many
for this.
Jams. As far as contacting the Tishy family, you can go to thisshowhaseverything.com. Or if you want to comment, you can go to throwyourphone.com. There is a...
That was one of the best things that you ever made.
Yes. I have a problem reserving URLs. So when I get an idea, I just immediately go get the URL, and probably 1 out of every 10 I actually do something with. So we'll see. So you can go to the Facebook group, just search for Tishy and look for our logo. There's a bunch of people in there talking. You can find them on Twitter at Tishy Show. Email them tishy@10710.com. You can send us a voice memo, which is kind of like a voicemail, except for you record it on your phone and then email it to us. Or you can fax Bobby whatever you want at 617-354-8513.
Send Bobby a fax of a moon, if you know what I mean.
Hey.
I mean, it doesn't have to be just a butt. It could be all sorts of stuff. I don't know. Whatever. Just make it gross. That's all. Just make it gross. That's all I'm saying. Is that it? Am I supposed to do something else now? Do I read that last line?
Yeah, read it. Get us out of here.
All right. Hey, everybody, be safe. Make your choices. Wash your hands. Thanks for joining us. And that was everything.
Woo-hoo.
About space.
It really was.
It was nothing. I feel like it was the merest scratching of the surface.
That's the thing about space. Is there so much?
Believe it or not, I held back.
Time, man.
Your love is bright as ever, even in the shadows. Baby, kiss me before they turn the lights out. Your heart is glowing and I'm crashing into you. Baby, kiss me before they turn the lights out. Before they turn the lights out. Baby, love me, lights out. In the darkest night. Run now. This is what we see.